Party.
Yeah. On record.
Mm-hmm.
This is the Pittsburgh section of the National Council of Jewish Women Oral History Program. Jean Samuels and Virginia Vatz are interviewing Irma Meyerson on August 9th, 1991. Irma, will you please give us your name and address, and also give us the correct spelling of your name? Thank you.
Irma Meyerson, that's E-R-M-A-M-E-Y-E-R-S-O-N. The address is 114 Beachmont, B-E-E-C-H-M-O-N-T, Road, Pittsburgh, zip is 15206.
We're now going to start the interview, and I want you to know that you should relax, and this will be a very informal kind of interview. If you have any questions or want to elaborate on anything, we'll be glad to do it. Let's start by your telling us about your parents, siblings, and your early childhood. Were you born in Pittsburgh?
I was born in Pittsburgh, but my family lived in Charleroi. My mother came into Pittsburgh to have me.
You have how many siblings?
I have one sibling, a brother, who is a couple of years older than I.
You were born and raised in...
I lived in Charleroi throughout my high school years.
Yeah, right. Okay, let's move on a little bit to your house situation, the kind of atmosphere in the home, and your cultural activities and religious disciplines and the sort of thing that went on in your early...
You want to know about my home when I was a child.
Right.
Well, as I recall it, it was a very warm, active household. My father was in business in Charleroi. My mother was active in some of the community activities, and my brother and I were in the school, went through their school system, and were very active in the extracurricular activities in school. We had a number of friends. In the Charleroi community, there was only a relatively small group of Jewish people. There was a small temple, which was sort of a mixture of extreme Orthodox all the way through to extreme Reform, all of this represented in about 20 families, so that there was how things were going to be carried out at the temple in terms of services. It was kind of interesting the way they resolved it, since the community was, the congregation was too small for a permanent rabbi. They used it for field work from the Hebrew Union College, so that one year there would be a rabbi-to-be, a student from Hebrew Union who would come and conduct high holiday services, which pleased the Reform elements very much. The following year, the rabbi would be from the, what's the one in New York, the Orthodox?
Theological
Seminary. And that pleased the Orthodox. So that it was this kind of a compromise. I attended the Sunday school, was confirmed by Rabbi Goldenson from Yad Vashem in Pittsburgh. He came to Charleroi and performed the day that I think the Sabbath school did a very good job in terms of what they taught us and keeping our...
I'd be curious to know that during the time the Orthodox rabbi came to conduct the services at your temple. Was this confusing to you as a student, or how did you adapt to...
I guess it wasn't confusing. I reflected my parents' attitude, which was that when it was the term of the turn of the Reform rabbi to come. They were pleased with the service, etc. On alternate years, when the Orthodox rabbi came, my mother, I recall, sat with a rather pained face and folded arms. They, not to the point of being conspicuous, but, and I guess I viewed it as I was older with a certain amount of amusement more than anything else. I didn't have the saints either pro or con, the Orthodox or Reform. My home was Reform, and I suppose that was my inclination.
So there was no conflict. You knew all along in growing up that you were expected to, or you did fit into the Reform program rather than the Orthodox program.
Oh, there was no confusion on that
at
all.
No confusion. Yeah.
As a matter of fact, the Reform and the Orthodox families, in spite of the small Jewish population, didn't interact very much. It was sort of fickle.
Oh, that's...
my parents' friends were the Reform families in the community. My own life in growing up was almost entirely with non-Jewish friends because there just didn't happen to be very many my age from Jewish families.
This is rather typical of small town interaction. And it's interesting to see how it works out. You did learn some. Was there anything taught in the nature of the history or background in other religions?
In the Sabbath school?
Yes.
Oh, I don't think they did much of that, but I did go to a summer camp where, which was not a Jewish camp, and each Sunday we went into one of the little towns where they had a church, and we all went, and I went too, and I remember being in the, they just worked the campers into the Sunday school classes in this little town, and it was kind of interesting. I didn't know anything about the New Testament, but they primarily, in the Sunday school, were talking about the content of the Old Testament, and interestingly enough, not that I was that much brighter than the other kids, but I knew a great deal more than the children from the surrounding town, and I think it was because the people who taught us in Charleroi, they were usually local people, and they were good, and they knew the Bible, and they sort of engendered enthusiasm from us.
Well, so that they really were sensitive to comparative religion in a certain...
Well, you could not be sensitive when you were such a small minority of people in a town that was so overwhelmingly non-Jewish, and where you interacted in a much closer way than you might in a large city where your own group would be larger and you could have more choice of friends among them.
How did this small town, different religion and different backgrounds spill over into your relationships at school?
You mean
grade school?
I was just friendly with
you. You were friendly with everybody at grade school and your...
No, there was obviously a kind of socioeconomic divide, and that was probably more influential in terms of people with whom you were friendly than religion.
I see.
So that people who were upper middle class tended to associate more with one another, and the lower middle class, the children of people who worked in the coal mine or people who worked in the glass factory or what have you, had their own group. Well, it wasn't structured on religion. It was structured, but there was no reason to be, there weren't that many Jews around, so that they could have been totally ignored. They weren't. So my family, my parents' closest friends were Jewish, not so with me, because they just would have necessarily picked them because they were or were not Jewish. But I just in a socioeconomic group of girls and boys.
Did you go to high school in Charleroi?
Yes.
And all 4 years at high school.
Right.
And continued with practically the same
group. Yeah, in high school, I belonged to a high school sorority. I was the only Jewish girl in the sorority, which again wasn't much picking and choosing. I don't think there was any other Jewish girls in my class. But, for instance, we were very close. When I was confirmed, my whole sorority came to my confirmation. All sent me gifts and what have you. There were some girls in the sorority who were Catholic, and the majority were Protestant. And we all had a pretty close bond.
You ever seen any of them?
From them, too, occasionally.
Mm-hmm. How about activities, your recreational activities? How was the town set up? Did they have, were the sports based on the intramural at high school, or did you have places to go to? Did you participate in sports?
I wasn't very sportsy. We were devout fans, so that we went to all the football games and all the basketball games, and sports for girls were not very well organized at that point. You went to gym, but that wasn't exactly organized sports. We played tennis, which wasn't school-related, and I guess we did the kind of the usual things that young people our age at that time did. We dated, we went to dances, we went to movies. One of our exciting things, which is certainly time-dated, was going to hear big-name bands. We would go in a group of friends.
Go where?
We would go to hear big-name bands, for instance. For me even to remember the names of those bands now, but...
Benny Goodman.
Yeah, you know, that was the era of the big-name bands, and that was a big... we all knew the music, we all knew who the members of the bands were, and they would, at that time, they traveled around so that they would be playing in one community, and people from all over the area
would come.
Mostly young people like us, but that was we had a good time doing that, and we did all the same kind of things that I guess young communities do. The only thing was we did not have the cultural advantages, so that my mother would very frequently bring me into Pittsburgh to hear good music or to see a play or what have you, because what they had at home was only local kinds of things that weren't very very good.
I'd like to know a little bit about the basics of the community, such as did they have a good health and medical care set up in the community, or did you have to leave the community to...
They didn't have very much organized health service at that point
in
time.
No hospitals.
Oh, yes, there were hospitals.
They had hospitals nearby?
Yes, there were a couple of hospitals in the area. If it was anything serious, we were referred to a Pittsburgh hospital. So that, for instance, I was born in a Pittsburgh hospital, and I don't think it occurred to my mother to have her children in the local hospital. They had a different frame of reference. At home, we had our own private doctor, our own private dentist. Most of it was private practice, and you went to them. And if you had to have hospital
service. You did not, obviously, you came into the city to go to college. Were there colleges in Charleroi?
No, there wasn't. There was a normal school about 20 miles from Charleroi.
A teacher's training
school. At that time they called them normal schools. They're now colleges. Nobody, none of my friends went to the local. There was a local business college, but that was about all that was available. And all of my friends, we all went away to college at the same time when we graduated from high school.
Tell me a little bit about your experience. When did you move to Pittsburgh? Tell me about your college experience and how you chose the college you went to, etc.
Well, when I graduated, my brother had already graduated and was going to the University of Pittsburgh. When I graduated 2 years later, it was in the midst of the Depression, and there wasn't much of a choice. My father told me if I was going to go to college, I was going to go to one of the Pittsburgh universities. And I chose what was then Carnegie Tech, now Carnegie Mellon, for a variety of reasons. Some of my friends were going to go to Carnegie Mellon. I did not want to be in the same school that my brother was in. I wanted to an experience where I didn't have him preceding me through all my experiences, which is what happened when I was in high school. Carnegie Tech had a very good reputation and academically, so I think these were the things that influenced
me. So you majored in what at Carnegie Tech, or did you make this? You didn't know what you were going to...
No, in the first 2 years, you don't really have a major.
Yeah.
By the time I selected a major, they had an undergraduate social work department, and I had decided that was what I wanted. So I went into the social work department, which they no longer have, but they did at that time.
And then you spent all...
No. As a matter of fact, it was interesting. Carnegie Mellon did a cost analysis, and they found that of all the departments in the university, the second most expensive was to educate a social worker.
Hmm.
The first being nuclear physics, the second being social work. And at that time, because they were cutting back on their budget, they decided that for an institute of technology, which was what it was at that time, the money could be better spent. No, I don't think it needs to be written. And so they eliminated the social work department.
And it was such a big one, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was the prominent social work department at that time. What happened, I don't know if you want to be gory details, what happened was they had an undergraduate program of 4 years in which you got a bachelor's of social work. During the time I was there, the profession of social work changed it to a graduate level training program. So it had to be a master's of social work, which meant another 2 years. And at that point, Pitt picked up and decided they wanted to build a school of social work. And for a couple of years, Pitt and Carnegie Mellon were raised, but it was that point that the administration and the trustees at Carnegie wanted to eliminate the social work program. Graduate work to the University of Pittsburgh. Took the undergraduate program, but the bachelor's was no longer a very significant degree in social work, in professional social work. So that's why I went to Pitt and went away. Incidentally, I also got a master's degree, or a fellowship for my master's study, which helped to induce me to go on.
Okay.
I was in a special master's degree program, which was 3 years. But I was, it was a Heinz fellowship program. I think there were something like 15 of us. It was not the total class. The total class was over 100. But the ones who had been awarded this particular fellowship took a wide variety of courses and experiences that the ordinary master's student didn't have. It was a good program. It was just that people wouldn't devote 3 years to it.
Where did you go from there in your professional? This developed into a professional career.
Yeah.
Right. Well, tell us a little about where you went from there.
Well,
after graduation.
After graduation, we were in the middle of World War II. I had married, graduate school, continued my graduate education. My first working experience, now I had done a number of field work experiences prior to that because it was a program that had an internship as well as coursework. My first working experience, because I wanted something that I could leave if I had to, my husband, was I was in charge of the women's division of the United Jewish Federation Drive. Which I had a job that I think I had an interesting year and very insightful.
Have any use for your professional background during the war years?
Yes, when I went to join my husband, I took Miller's aid, and that was a fascinating experience. Stationed in the States, and when he went overseas, I came back to Pittsburgh.
Red Cross.
Uh-huh. Servicing the families of servicemen. That, too, was a very fascinating. While I was with the Red Cross, I got a call from the...
Pardon me, is this at Carnegie Tech?
At Carnegie Tech, where I was for, I guess about 10 years. Two children during the time I was teaching at Carnegie Tech. I was, interestingly enough, the first person that Carnegie Tech had ever given a maternity leave. They didn't have policy. And when I put my first pregnancy, I told my department chairwoman that I was going to have to put everything and see. And I think it was Dr. White wished a policy. There were, as I say, there, at that time, there was no women's liberty. There was no thought about that kind of thing. So he simply made a policy himself that he would give me maternity leave instead of having me. Well, I think I had a maternity leave for, I don't know about. And now they don't think of these kind of maternity leaves. I think it was about 8-9 months.
Oh.
Then when I got pregnant again, I thought, well, you know, this is the end of my teaching. And they gave her maternity leave. So I don't think they did. I know they wouldn't do that now because I was in academia. And,
how long did you stay at Trinity Tech?
10 years. And I loved it there. I
and
enjoyed
then what
it.
Happened from after
well,
that?
During the time I was at Carnegie Tech, Pitt was starting to build what they perceived, and rightfully, I think, as a dynamo deans in the country to establish their professional school.
Do you remember the name of that person?
Sure. Wilbur Neustetter. And
N-E-W-S?
N-E-U-S-T-E-T-T-E-R, I think it is.
Something like that.
And I was serving on a national committee with him. I was representing Carnegie Tech. He asked me if I would come to Pitt to join the faculty there. I was kind of in a quandary. I didn't know what to do. I enjoyed it very much at Carnegie Tech. But the handwriting was on the wall. Pitt was going to be the place to be, not Carnegie Tech, in spite of anything having to do with the comparative ratings of the schools or anything else. When it came to my field, it was going to be Pitt. So I left.
During this time, you say you had small children. How did you handle the bringing up of the children while teaching at Pitt?
Well, initially, I always kept a full-time housekeeper. I was fortunate enough to be able to do that. I also had a nursemaid who was to be with the children. And one of the advantages of being in someplace like academia is that you're not in rigid hours, so that you can, you're more at liberty. And Carnegie Mellon was only a half dozen blocks from where I lived, so that if anything came up, this is while they were little. Then, when they got older and were starting in kindergarten, I spent a lot more time with the children than I would have if I had been taught.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's what happened. While you were teaching, did you have time for any extracurricular activities?
No, I was into everything.
Traveling, and tell us about the activities.
Well, I was in a lot of civic and political activities, also in a number of academic activities, so that I was on a number of Rubikoff, who was at that time Secretary of Education.
You said a half hour.